Fee. His eyes were barely open, but he politely murmured, "Thanks," before nestling on the sofa. "Is it okay for Casper to chew on that shoe?" I asked. "Huh?" Felix moaned. "Give me that." He hustled over to Casper and took the moccasin away from him. The rest of them staggered in slowly. Even energetic Brian viewed me with bleary eyes and a giant yawn.
"Your aunt is a hoot."
I poured coffee for him. "Really? I don't know that side of her." "Aw, man, she's so into spirits. Wish I had an aunt like her." I bit back my desire to beg him to take her. Mr. Luciano turned up, looking rested and pleased. Gina trotted along beside him. Lillian Elsner and Aunt Bertie arrived simultaneously from different directions. Their eyes met, and I could almost hear Western-style dueling music. Walking as fast as she could, Bertie collided with Lillian, elbow to elbow in her eagerness to be the first to reach Mr. Luciano. Lillian won. She straightened the riding blazer she wore over a blue button-down shirt and smoothed her trousers. Glory B joined the other dogs. Polite canine-sniffing protocol ensued. Aunt Bertie's thin lips rolled into an angry slash as she watched Lillian greet Mr. Luciano. Eva's words, "Two can play this game," echoed in my head as Bertie slid into the seat next to Mr. Luciano, the very seat in which Lillian, no doubt, had planned to sit. I saw it coming before it happened. Not realizing that Bertie had slid into the chair behind her, Lillian sat on Bertie's bony knees. Bertie jerked up, sending Lillian to the floor. I set the coffee pot on the table and rushed to Lillian's aid. "I'm so sorry. Are you all right?" I held out my arms to her. Bertie rose to her full height. In her very best southern lady voice, she trilled, "Mercy me! Darling, a heifer has to be careful where it plops its hindquarters." I wanted a hole to open in the floor and swallow her. I wasn't that lucky, though. "Lillian, let me help you up." Grayson beat me to it. I scooted out of the way, and Lillian looped her hands over his shoulders. But if Bertie thought she'd won, she was dead wrong. Mr. Luciano offered Lillian the coveted chair next to him. Bertie turned paler than Becca Wraith's ghost. "Maybe you should go," I whispered.
"I will do no such thing. They're going to talk about my ghosts. If anyone has a right to be here, it's me."
I hoped she realized that her game had backfired and she'd lost the battle for Mr. Luciano. Bertie lifted her scrawny chin. Holding her head high, she strode across the room, took the seat next to Grayson, and patted his hand. Lillian was as sweet as could be.
"Now don't fuss about me. I just took a little spill is all. I seem to be doing that a lot lately."
I cast a dirty look at Aunt Bertie, who turned away. When everyone had calmed down, Mr. Luciano asked Eva if she'd had a chance to analyze the EVPs from the hotel. One cameraman turned in her direction, and the other focused on Brian, who scooted to the edge of his seat. I hoped he wasn't gearing up for another outburst like the one yesterday. Eva cleared her throat.
"While almost anything can be achieved these days through technology, I'm unable to find any evidence of tampering with the recording. EVPs can be a little bit tricky because the sounds are so full of static that they're often unrecognizable as words, until the words are imputed and the power of suggestion comes into play."
Eva paused for a moment. "You will be happy to know that in my years of listening to EVPs, these are the most remarkable ones I have ever heard. There is no doubt that a child's voice is saying, 'I'm gonna get you.'" A cheer went up among the ghost hunters. Mr. Luciano applauded and grinned. When the noise subsided, Eva continued. Unless the recorder picked up a child's voice from another location. She lifted her forefinger as though suggesting caution, which is possible with baby monitors and the like. I cannot explain away this particular EVP. The guys high-fived and the dogs danced among their feet, joining in the excitement. They settled down to discuss their plan to return to the hotel that night to see if they could catch more EVPs or even contact the child.
"Birdie," said Mr. Luciano, "are you aware of any children who died at the Wagtail Springs Hotel? Mark's research hasn't turned up anything involving children."
Birdie sat up straight, clearly proud to be considered an authority.
"I don't know of any child ghosts at the hotel, but I'll go through some of my books to see if I can find any mention of children dying there."
"And finally," said Mr. Luciano, "we thank you, Birdie, for a fascinating night at your home. Our ghost hunters caught images of your flying books on tape. Perhaps the most startling moments were when Birdie channeled her deceased relatives and told us what they had to say. It's not every day that we meet a psychic medium."
Birdie blushed. Now, I'm not anything special. The ghosts just live in my house and I talk with them."
"Eva, what's your take on the haunting of Birdie's house?" asked Mr. Luciano.
"With all due respect to Birdie, of course, I cannot enter her mind to hear and see what she perceives as a ghost."
"That's right," said Birdie. "You can't see or hear them."
Eva smiled. "There are several theories that may apply. Automatism certainly comes to mind. It's an altered state of mind, not unlike sleepwalking. People enter a spontaneous fugue in which they can spirit write or speak to spirits. Most likely, however, the thoughts and drawings actually stem from their own memories and thoughts."
Birdie snorted. "They do not."
"Another popular theory, which has been scientifically verified, is the presence of low-frequency vibrations. The human ear only captures certain sounds, but there are other sounds around us, caused by weather, movement, all sorts of things. Not everyone is affected, but some people, like Birdie perhaps, are more in tune with them, and they tend to hear or see things that are actually caused by the low-frequency vibrations."
"Maybe ghosts are the source of these low-frequency vibrations."
Birdie was miffed.
"And lastly, I have to say that I saw some definite apophenia."
"I do not have apophenia," declared Birdie. "What is that?"
"It's when we attribute significance to insignificant or unrelated things. Like last night when the book fell off the table, for instance. You said Elmer must have thrown it. Then the wind blew and the curtain billowed. You claimed Elmer was walking through the room and had made the curtain move. Later on, you tripped in the dark and claimed Elmer was at fault. The truth, of course, is that there was simply no connection between any of those events. The book sliding off the table, I'll grant you, was odd. But I am confident that there is a slope or some underlying low-frequency vibration that caused it to fall. The curtain blew because of the wind, not because of Elmer. And you tripped because it was dark, and the floors in your lovely old house are uneven."
"Why, never in my entire life have I heard such a load of hogwash. The only true thing you said was that you can't see or hear what I see and hear. So there."
"Miss Dupuis, do you have gas in your house?" asked Eva.
"Yes, of course. I only cook with gas. I don't know how anyone can stand electric stoves."
"You might want to have your house checked for low levels of carbon monoxide. It's been known to induce hallucinations."
"Were you raised up in a barn, child? No one has ever insulted me like that, except, of course, for my only living relative, Holly Miller."
"Me? What did I do now?" Thankfully, Mr. Luciano wrapped things up. When he finished, Felix raised the shoe that had seen better days before Casper gnawed on it. Holding it in the air, he asked, "Who does this belong to?" Most of the guys glanced at him, but no one claimed the shoe. "Huh." Felix lowered his arm and examined the moccasin. Casper tried to take it from him. "I'll make you a deal. If no one comes looking for the shoe by tomorrow, you can have it, okay?" Casper didn't seem pleased by the bargain, but what choice did he have? Felix, if you and Casper don't mind, maybe I should stash that in the lost and found box at the reception desk. Oh, sure. Felix handed the moccasin to me. Casper's sad expression reminded me that I had to find a replacement for the toy dinosaur that Gingersnap and Trixie had de-stuffed. I retrieved my wallet and a leash and paused on my way out to place the shoe in our lost and found box and let Oma know where I was going. Trixie and I took the walkway through the grassy green center of the pedestrian area. Little pumpkins still lined the meandering path. Toward the middle, we cut over to the stores on the right. But before we hit the sidewalk, I caught a glimpse of Parker Colby up to no good. 26. There wasn't a place to hide and spy on him. I pretended to walk in the opposite direction, but quickly paused to admire a store window display. Why hadn't Dave gotten rid of this creep yet? I knew he was busy with the murder investigation, but there were laws against stalking. It was time Dave took some action. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Clementine and her children leave a store. Parker ambled along behind them. Once again, Eva's words echoed in my head. Two can play this game. I hurried toward him. "Parker! Parker, hi!" He kept going. I tried again. "Parker!" By now, everyone was looking at me. Everyone except Parker. I could see the tension in his shoulders. He finally turned toward me. I rushed up to him and started babbling to give Clementine time to get away. "Hi, I thought you didn't hear me. Isn't it a glorious day? How is your search for office space coming?" Parker stared at me blankly. Aha! Caught him. He recovered, though. "Very well, thanks." He pointed in Clementine's direction. "I'm just on my way to an appointment." "We'll walk with you." I grinned at him and hoped he would think I was flirting. "Where are you headed?" But before he could answer, I heard a sweet little voice shout, "Trixie!" Clementine's daughter Emily ran toward us. Trixie tugged at her leash, wagging her tail. Emily dropped her stuffed dog and wrapped her little arms around Trixie, who licked Emily's face. It would have been a heartwarming scene if Big Mama Bear Clementine weren't standing a few yards away, shooting daggers at me with her eyes. "Emily, come this instant! Emily!" shouted Clementine. I bent over to Emily. "Honey, I think your mom wants you. Maybe you can play with Trixie later on." "Emily, right now!" Clementine's voice held a no-nonsense note that even I recognized. Emily stood up. "Bye-bye, Trixie." She ran back to her mother, who hustled her children around the corner and out of sight. All I had to do was engage Parker for a few more minutes. "Have you rented a place, then?" I picked up Lassie, the stuffed dog Emily had forgotten in her haste. "Not yet. Excuse me, but I have to hurry." I stepped in front of him. "Nonsense! You're in Wagtail. Life moves at a different pace in the mountains. Don't you think that's one of the nicest things about it? I moved here from Washington, D.C. Everyone was always in such a rush. It's nice to be laid back, you know." "Still, I shouldn't be late." "Of course not. Don't let me keep you. Was it this way you were going?" I strolled on, straining to think of things to keep asking him to slow him down. "So, have you signed a lease? What's the name of your magazine?
I really have to go. Excuse me.
Parker bounded off and turned in the direction Clementine had gone. Trixie and I dashed after him. We slowed at the corner, and I peered around it. Parker stood in the middle of the street, his hands on his hips. They'd lost him. Yay! Feeling pretty darned good about myself, I gazed around at the stores. The dark storefront of Putting on the Dog looked like a gaping hole among the cheerful show windows. I was surprised no one had grabbed it. Puppy Love was a much smaller store, but I popped in, hoping they might have a dinosaur toy. They didn't, but the lovely clerk sent me to Pounce and Fetch. The second we walked in the door, Trixie went into wagging overdrive. She wriggled from her nose to her tail. I asked if they had a Halloween black cat toy for dogs, but they didn't. Trixie wasn't too upset about it, though. She snuffled her way through an aisle of amazing cat toys. I made a mental note to bring Twinkletoes with me one day. She would love the remote control mice, catnip toys, and incredible cat trees to climb. I picked up a crinkle tunnel for her. Trixie led me to the selection of balls, from tiny ones no bigger than a golf ball all the way to special soccer balls made with creases so dogs could pick them up. Trixie kept going, though. In the stuffed animal aisle, she zeroed in on a squeaking, fuzzy yellow duck. It was too big for her, but I didn't care. She loved it and carried it around the store as I searched for a dinosaur. And there it was, a green stegosaurus with triangular purple spikes on its back, just like the one Trixie and Gingersnap had destroyed. I took my items to the register and paid for them. Pointing at Emily's stuffed dog, the clerk asked, "Shall I add the other doggie to the bag, too, so you don't have so much to juggle?" "Great idea, thanks." Armed with our bag of goodies, Trixie and I left the store and bumped into a very weary-looking Dave. His haggard appearance softened my resolve to let him have it about Parker Colby. "How about I buy you a cup of coffee?" I asked. His face brightened briefly. "You have information for me?" "Come on." I bought 2 pumpkin spice lattes, a big box of Frankenstein brownies with green faces, big white eyes, teeth and screws in their necks, and a bat cookie for Trixie. Dave led the way to a bench on the path in the green. He popped off the top of his coffee and swigged half of it. "Don't you ever stop to eat and drink? Maybe you haven't heard. There was a murder in town." I ignored his sarcasm. "Does that mean it's officially a murder now?" My pulse quickened, and not from the coffee. He grunted unhappily. "Murder, no. Drowning, yes. Doc was dead on. The official autopsy report is back. Cause of death was drowning. She had a bruise on the back of her head and another on her back, not inconsistent with a fall. No sign of strangulation. No scratch marks. Nothing of interest under the nails." "You're not buying it?" "Are you?" "I want to. The ghost hunters are all so nice. I really want to think that they're innocent." I sighed. "Did you know that Mark and Eva were engaged and Mallory came between them?" Dave sat back against the bench. "Yeah. Sure gives both of them motive, doesn't it?" He bit into his brownie. I felt like a traitor. "Mark seems nice. I'm still not sure why he didn't report Mallory missing." "He was at the inn with Eva until early in the morning." "Then he could have killed Mallory on his way home. I can't quite figure out why Mallory was staying with Mark if they weren't a couple." Trixie cocked her head at me as though she was wondering if she would ever get a bite of her cookie. I broke off a piece for her. "You still seeing that guy, Ben?" That was a major change of topic. "No, we broke up. We're done." "I have it on good authority that he's staying with you." "Well, yeah, but he's in the guest room." Oh, I get it. Mark told you she was staying there, but they weren't involved? Apparently, it was her habit to arrive unannounced. This time, he agreed to let her stay because she had signed on to play the role of Becca Wraith in the Ghost Walk. He called around to find another place for her to bunk, but all the rooms were booked for Halloween. But that doesn't make sense. I'm not sure I believe him. Mallory was dreaming of their wedding. She wanted to be married right away. A girl doesn't usually do that unless there's some flame to the fire. Maybe dreaming is the right word. Sometimes one person is more involved than the other. People have been known to be disillusional and not give up on someone whom they loved. I'd forgotten about his rotten experience with his last girlfriend. Did you give up? This isn't about me. Focus, Holly. Anything else? How about Parker Colby? Dave drew back and looked at me. What does he have to do with Mallory? You tell me. Didn't Oma complain to you about him stalking Clementine? Oh, that. Yeah. I'll have another talk with him. How can you be so calm about it? He checked out okay. Clementine hasn't said a word to me about him. Are you sure she's upset? She's running from him, Dave. Okay, okay. The sound of rustling leaves drew our attention. It was Trixie, digging in them frantically. She turned over a piece of broken pumpkin and continued to dig. What is that? Asked Dave. Just pumpkin. When I came through here the other night, one had broken. I guess that's a leftover piece. I hate it when kids do that. They come to Wagtail for Halloween because it's fun and all decked out, but then they go and vandalize the things that make it special. Hey, she found something else. Dave rose and picked up a small item. Trixie didn't take her eyes off it when he brushed off the leaves and dirt. A penknife. Pretty nice one, too. I watched him turn it over. Aren't you going to fingerprint it? A red flush crept up his neck to his ears. Aw, Holly, you've been in the city too long. Some guy probably sat at this bench and it fell out of his pocket. Besides, Mallory wasn't stabbed. Well, sure, I said sarcastically, because her killer dropped his knife. Dave dutifully pulled a plastic bag out of his pocket and slipped the red knife inside. You do realize that almost every male resident of Wagtail owns one of these? This isn't going to be a clue. He held the bag between his hands and stared at the knife. I wish it was. I could use some help with this case. He sat down beside me again. So you'll talk to Parker? Can't you just run him out of town or something? I knew what he was thinking, that he had a bigger problem on his hands with Mallory's death. How can you be so sure that Parker didn't kill Mallory? Dave picked up his brownie with a napkin and ate the rest of it instead of answering me. We don't live in the Wild West, Holly. I'm on top of it. You're as pushy as your grandmother. Thank you. He suppressed a grin. There has to be something I'm overlooking. Trixie's lips brushed my fingers when she tried to nibble the cookie that I held in my hand. I broke off another piece for her. We know that Brian and Eva were outside of the inn that night. It always comes back to the same people, doesn't it? Brian and Eva, Felix and Zelda, and Mark. You can't be serious about Zelda. Dave took a deep breath. Just doing my job, Holly. Please, I'm getting enough flack from Rose and Doc and their crowd. They're fighting me tooth and nail on this. Don't you start on me, too. He stood up. Thanks for the snack. If you learn anything else, let me know. He turned to leave. Hey, Dave. He paused and looked back at me. Do you know where Mark lives? He grinned at me, and I suspected I was in his good graces again. Over on Elm, on the west side of town. It's a white Cape Cod with the brightest blue door you ever saw. You can't miss it. Dave left, ambling along the path lined with pumpkins. I wanted to believe Doc. There was only one problem. I didn't. From the beginning, I had thought someone had a hand in Mallory's death. I watched Trixie dig in the leaves, tossing them every which way. Mallory's death was driving a wedge between generations in this town. The older folks sided with Doc and his belief that Mallory's death had been an accident, while the younger crowd suspected foul play. I stretched and stood up. Well, no one could be upset with me for walking Trixie, could they? We struck out for Hair of the Dog. At the tables in front of the bar, I checked my watch. At a leisurely pace, we walked the 6 blocks to the pedestrian zone, crossed it in the most logical location, and walked the couple of blocks to Zelda's house. The ancient home suited Zelda. A short, stacked stone fence surrounded the property. Carved pumpkins sat atop it, flanking the walkway to the house. Ivy climbed the walls. Stone covered the first story, and dark weathered wood clad the upstairs. Diamond-pane glass accented the dormer windows. Out front, a sign announced her pet psychic business. A black cat sat on the front stoop, eyeing us warily. Zelda had capitalized on the natural gingerbread appearance of her home by placing a black kettle near the front door, along with witches' brooms and old black boots. A collection of witches' hats hung on a coat rack. Spider webs draped the doorway, and skulls lay about helter-skelter. I checked my watch. 20 minutes. On to Mark's place. Elm Street was only 2 blocks down. It was a typical wagtail street with lots of trees, tidy yards, and an odd combination of house styles, reflecting the years they had been built. 3 blocks later, the bright blue front door of a Cape Cod indicated that we had arrived. I checked my watch again. A mere 12 minutes from Zelda's house. Trixie and I headed back to the inn. Another 15 minutes. By my calculations, Felix would have been back at the inn just before 3 in the morning. And that didn't even count the amount of time Mallory would have needed to change into the Becca Wraith costume. Of course, it was largely useless information, because no one had noted the exact time of Felix's return to the inn. Still, had he drowned Mallory, he would have returned much later and might have been seen by Eva or Brian, both of whom would have surely mentioned something by now. I had barely stepped inside when Shelley called out, "She's here." Zelda peeked out of Oma's office. "Where have you been?" "Walking. What happened?" Shelley motioned for me to follow her into Oma's office. "We can't talk about this when your grandmother is present. Hurry." Casey was lounging on the sofa with a cup of coffee. Holmes sat on the other side. He waved to me and smiled. "Didn't you bring any leftover goodies, Shelley?" asked Casey. Trixie sprang onto the sofa and nestled under Holmes's arm. She gazed up at his face as though he were the most wonderful person in the world. Not that I blamed her for feeling that way. I set the box of Frankenstein brownies on the table. "Will this do, Casey?" I plopped my shopping bag on the floor next to a cushy chair. "Hey, cool!" He snatched one up. Zelda poured coffee into a mug and handed it to me. She cracked the door ever so slightly. "So I can see if anyone is out there," she explained. I added milk and sugar to my coffee and settled into my seat. Shelley spoke in a low voice. "We're all worried about Zelda because of the rumor. We thought if we brainstormed and worked together, we might be able to figure this out. But," she looked from me to Holmes, "no blabbing to the older set in Wagtail, specifically your grandmother's." I felt like I had missed something. "What rumor?" Zelda choked on her coffee. Holmes spoke up. that three people left Hair of the Dog together that night, and one of them was dead in the morning. My initial reaction was to spout nonsense and say how silly that was. But then it dawned on me that the rumor, no matter how ugly it sounded, was true. Ugh, that's really rough.
It is, whined Zelda. It's totally unfair. Just because we left with her doesn't mean we killed her.
Of course not, I said as soothingly as I could. It didn't look good for her, though. Anyone could see the logic in that dreadful rumor. Shelley cleared her throat. So let's talk this through, okay? I don't dare leave Mr. Huckle alone too long serving afternoon tea. I've made a list. Zelda aside, because we know she didn't do anything. I figure it has to be one of the apparition apprehenders because so few people in Wagtail knew Mallory. Let me guess, said Holmes. Mark is first on the list.
Of course he is.
I ticked off items on my fingers as I spoke. Mallory wanted to marry him. She was staying with him. She had already come between him and Eva once before. And he was planning to reconcile with Eva this weekend. At least that's what Eva thought. Holmes frowned at me. Look, I know Mark a little bit. He's a good guy. What you're saying doesn't make sense unless he was two-timing them, and honestly, I don't think he's the type who would do that. I held up my hands. Just saying, he and Eva are an item now. Shelley spoke as she checked off little boxes on her list. Mark had a motive to get rid of Mallory, and apparently he had the opportunity.
Which brings us to Eva, said Zelda. She doesn't even deny being outside later that night. So she has motive and opportunity, too.
They could have done it together, said Casey.
What about Brian? I asked. I still don't know what he was doing outside in the wee hours of the morning. At least Eva concocted a story about a light in her window. Brian said he went for a walk.
Opportunity. But did he have a motive? Asked Shelley.
He kept hitting on Mallory at the bar, and she was pretty brutal in her rejection of him, said Zelda.
He wouldn't kill a girl for that, would he? I asked.
Are you kidding? Casey helped himself to another brownie. It's hard being rejected by girls all the time. The poor guy probably flipped out.
It's not like it hasn't happened before, said Shelley. What about that Felix guy? I'm sorry, Zelda, I know you like him.
I do, too. But he was the last person seen with her.
Zelda shook her head.
Impossible. I saw him leave Mark's house.
I just walked it. We can count out Felix and Zelda.
Zelda beamed at me. Why didn't I think of that?
He could have doubled back, offered Casey.
In that case, we're not any more suspect than anyone else, Zelda protested. Brian could have just as easily walked over to Mark's house while he was out on his walk. Besides, Felix doesn't have a motive.
That we know of, Casey muttered.
I think he might be true blue, I offered. He was upset that Mallory was flirting with him in front of Mark. You know, when she introduced herself to Felix, Mallory said she had written Haunting Horrors of Wagtail.
I've heard that, too. Taking credit for his book is motive number two for Mark. Shelley made another note on her list.
Felix could be putting on an act in the hope that Zelda would be blamed for the murder, said Holmes.
Zelda gasped.
No!
She gazed around at us.
I'm sure that's not the case.
That leaves Grayson. Shelley flicked her pad with her pen.
Seems pretty nice, I said. When we stopped to buy muffins for Bertie, the ladies in the bakery went wild over him. He was very sweet about it.
Shelley sighed. They all had opportunity. We might as well just accept that. Any one of them could have left the inn and come back.
That unobserved front door is a bad idea. Casey's mouth twitched. I check it just about every hour now to be sure no one left it unlocked. It's a pain.
Someone could sneak in so easily. I shook my head. What had Oma been thinking when she moved the registration desk to the side entrance? I had to take up that subject with her.
I saw you coming back that night, Casey grinned at me. You were wetter than a dog after a swim.
I gazed at him in shock as I realized what we had all overlooked. Maybe none of our guests killed her. They turned their attention to me. I was soaked through. Whoever drowned her must have held her down. The water isn't deep, but that's all the more reason her killer would have had to be in the water. Whoever it was must have been wet. At least his or her feet and legs. Probably arms, too.
We fell silent.
That's the missing link, said Holmes. Even after walking back to the inn, his shoes probably would have left wet marks on the floor. Has anyone talked to the housekeeper? Maybe she noticed wet clothes or shoes.
In a calm voice, Shelley said, It had to be Mark then. He was the only one who didn't have to come back here. He went home and changed clothes. No one else was there to notice. He could have washed everything that night and no one would have been the wiser.
Shelley's plan to find the culprit and eliminate Zelda as a suspect had backfired. There was one other person who could have gone home soaking wet and no one would have been the wiser. Zelda. In my heart, I knew she couldn't, wouldn't have killed anyone. But she could have gotten away with it just as easily as Mark could have.
I'll talk with the housekeeper, I offered. All of us need to do some snooping to find out if Felix or Grayson had a motive.
Shelley nodded. I fear most of the evidence is pointing straight at Mark, but it wouldn't hurt to be sure. The bell rang at the registration desk. Zelda flew to the door.
Lillian cocked her head and smiled. I wondered where everyone went.
The rest of us rose to leave.
Casey, I said, the ghost hunters are making a return visit to the Wagtail Springs Hotel tonight. If you want to go along, I'll fill in for you.
The sleepy kid came to life.
No kidding?
His mouth hung open.
That's so great! Oh, man, this is the opportunity of a lifetime!
Shelley grabbed his shirt tail.
Don't forget to do some snooping about Grayson and Felix's connection to Mallory.
Yeah,
Casey agreed, still excited about the ghost hunting expedition. How long are you staying in town, Holmes? I asked.
Just through the big Halloween bash tomorrow night. I'm flying back to Chicago the next morning. Right now, I'm headed over to help Grandma Rose.
Want to come along?
A rustling noise caused us to look down. Trixie had buried her nose in the bag I set on the ground and was pulling out the stuffed dog that belonged to Emily.
No, I took it from her. Not this one.
I dug around for the yellow duck. Here, drool and chew on this all you like.
I looked at the loved-to-death dog in my hand and had visions of Emily crying and Clementine retracing her steps for it.
I think I'll pass, Holmes. I'd better get Lassie back to Emily before Clementine mounts a statewide search for him.
There's a major crisis, he teased. Call out the National Guard.
Holmes left with Shelley. I called Clementine from the phone in the office. No answer. Not even the ubiquitous voicemail picked up.
Want to go for a ride? I asked Trixie.
She wagged agreeably. We walked outside to the golf carts. Trixie carried her yellow duck the entire way. She hopped into the golf cart as though she'd been riding in them her whole life. She'd adapted quickly to the life in Wagtail and had been surprisingly well-behaved. I was beginning to think she might not run off again. I tucked the shopping bag into the black storage compartment of the cart, and we were off. The drive to Fireside Farms was gorgeous. Most of the leaves had fallen,
leaving bare branches exposed, but the reddish-gold carpet they created on the ground was stunning. The air held a nip in it, just enough to suggest that winter would be on its way, and we ought to enjoy the sunshine while it lasted. An occasional cloud drifted over the sun, and in one of those moments, I felt cold and weary. Without sunbeams, the leaves seemed drab and lifeless, and the wind whispered through the bare limbs of the trees. The white fence of Fireside Farms came into sight. We turned and chugged down the long driveway. But we had only made it midway when a scream pierced the air.
27. Trixie leaped off the golf cart and sped toward the barn, yelping. I parked the cart and ran after her. At the barn door, I paused. Trixie barked ferociously at a man bending over something, or someone. Clementine! I glanced around for a weapon, anything I could slam over his head or back. Where was a pitchfork when I needed one? I grabbed the only things nearby, a saddle and a rope horse halter connected to a lead. I flung the saddle on his back to weigh him down, straddled it, looped the halter over his head, and pulled it tight. Clementine! Clementine, are you all right? Say something, Clementine. Trixie danced around them, continuing her relentless yipping. Clementine! A feminine hand waved near the ground. I yanked the halter, stepped off him, and kicked the saddle away. Get up! That didn't turn out quite so well, because Parker towered over me and could have easily strangled me with his bare hands. Instead, he loosened the tight grip at his throat and choked out a whisper, "Can't breathe!" Clementine rolled over and sat up slowly, her hands around her throat. She waved at me, flicking her hand down, but I didn't understand her gesture. Parker seized the halter lead, and with one quick jerk it was out of my hands. I backed away and tried to call Dave, but couldn't get a signal on my phone. "Clementine, are you okay? Where's your gun?" She leaned over, pulled it out of a pocket, and handed it to me. "Oh, swell. A toy." I pointed it at Parker anyway. He backed away a step, his hands turned up with palms facing me. "I should get some credit here. Clementine, tell her." Clementine nodded. Her voice was raspy. "He's okay." I was thoroughly confused. "Trixie," I said, "that's enough barking." She followed her nose to another door, still emitting an occasional yip. Parker spoke calmly. "Please put the gun down." Not a chance. Did he think I was some kind of idiot? As long as he didn't get too close, maybe he wouldn't figure out that it was plastic. Parker rubbed his neck. What did that guy want? What guy? I asked. The one I pulled off of her? Clementine staggered to her feet. What did he want? She rasped. The same thing you want. Her voice gained strength with her anger. I don't have them. I don't have them. I don't have them. How many times do I have to tell people that I don't have them? She broke into a hacking cough. The phone rings all day long, she wheezed. I don't even answer it anymore. People are sneaking around, scaring me, frightening the children. For pity's sake, can't you leave us alone? I don't have them. Parker stared at her. He mashed his lips together and frown lines creased over his nose. After a long moment, he nodded his head. You know, I believe you. Then please leave me alone. Why did I feel like I was on the outside of this conversation? I didn't dare interrupt, though. Hey, he protested. Is this any way to show your appreciation? I just saved you from that creep. Tell her to put the gun down. Clementine held on to me as though she didn't have strength in her legs.
Thank you, she said bitterly. You'll forgive me, I'm sure, if I'm not overwhelmed with gratitude to someone who has made my life miserable.
Parker inhaled. If you'll pardon my saying so, I don't think I'm the one who did that. Clementine bit her upper lip and winced.
Would you please get off my property?
Parker blinked at her. Am I the only one who understands that you were just attacked? You could use my help. What if he's still around here? I finally butted in. You'd better come stay at the inn, Clementine.
I'm not leaving the house.
I'm calling Dave. I pulled out my cell phone again and walked toward the huge barn door.
You won't get a signal here, said Clementine. You can use the landline in the house.
Let's go then, I whispered. We stopped at the door to the barn and looked around.
When I say now, run for the side door, instructed Clementine.
Now! Clementine, Trixie, and I ran like our lives depended on it. Parker strolled, as if he hadn't a worry in the world. Where are the kids? Clementine shot an angry look at him.
You're not here.
She pulled a key from her pocket, but her hands shook so hard that she fumbled with the lock.
Give me that.
Parker took the key from her and unlocked the door. In a split second, we were inside with Parker. I wasn't sure if that was a good thing or not. After all, he did save her, but he shouldn't have been there in the first place. I picked up the wall phone, dialed 911, and told the dispatcher that Clementine had been attacked. A small tabby wound around my legs. She clenched a turquoise mouse in her mouth, much like the one Twinkletoes and Mrs. Muir had played with. When I hung up, Clementine and Parker were going at it. If I had wanted to hurt you, I could have, but it wouldn't do me any good to kill you, would it? Clementine pumped her fists on her hips.
You have no business intruding on my life.
I don't know about that. I think you were plenty lucky that I happened to be here. Do you know who he was?
Not a clue. You're not the only one, you know.
I was completely out of the loop again. Did her ex-husband hire you? I demanded. Parker looked at me in complete surprise.
Man, you're really out of it.
He hitched his thumb in my direction. She doesn't know? Clementine sagged into a chair. She looked so wan that I hurried to the fridge for something sweet, like orange juice, but it was nearly empty, seriously empty, like my refrigerator looked when I was getting ready to go on a long trip. There was milk for the kids in a glass jar. No label. Did they have a cow, I wondered. A bunch of spinach from the garden, 4 apples, and a block of cheese. I put the kettle on for tea. I hoped she had that.
What's going on, Clementine?
Have you ever heard of Ron Kuntz?
Heard of him?
I nearly lost my job because of him. She cringed.
How much money did you lose?
None. It wasn't like that. He made anonymous donations through my company. I was a fundraiser. Clementine closed her eyes and massaged her temples.
Is there no end to the people he hurt?
Parker slid into a chair at the kitchen table.
Sounds like Ron.
I don't get it. I opened empty cabinets in search of tea. All I found were dried chamomile blossoms in a pickling jar. I located a Royal Stafford bone china teapot with a bold red rim and lacy gold detail. It was far more ornate than we needed, but I placed a sieve on the top anyway and filled it with chamomile. I poured boiling water over the chamomile and brought the whole contraption to the table with mugs, napkins, spoons, and a sugar bowl. Clementine looked me straight in the eyes. My husband was one of Ron's associates.
What?
She couldn't be serious. but she was.
"I'm sorry. What they did was horrible."
Her eyelids fluttered.
"Stealing from people by promising them huge returns on their investments? I still can't bear to think of it. I asked Dad not to say anything to anyone. You can't imagine the guilt. But now I've lied to everyone I cared about. I hope you understand, Holly. I didn't want the pain and the shame following us here."
Parker raised an eyebrow. "Like you didn't know what your husband was doing? Give me a break."
Clementine threw him an ugly look. "We lived so well, but I never thought to question it. The nannies, the housekeeper, the exotic trips on private jets with Ron. Now I look back, I don't understand how I could have been so blind."
She studied her fingers.
"I trusted my husband."
"Your husband went to prison with Ron for the pyramid scheme?" Clementine nodded.
"I divorced him, of course. I turned everything of any value over to the feds. Everything. The house, the jewelry, the cars. It's been a huge adjustment for the children. I didn't think anyone would mind if I took the cats, but I had to sell some of my horses."
"Where are the horses?" I asked. I hadn't seen any in the barn.
"I took them over to another farmer for safekeeping. They're grazing on his land. I couldn't leave the house without being afraid someone would steal or harm them."
She wiped a strand of hair out of her face and winced.
"I never imagined anything like this could happen. I only kept what I brought into the marriage and gifts from my parents. It's one thing to lose your money because you made a poor investment. I know all about that from raising horses. But to steal other people's hard-earned money? They were relying on it for their retirements, for their kids' educations, for their dreams. And we squandered it. We even gave huge donations. Isn't that the worst? We got credit for being so generous."
She closed her eyes briefly.
"And it was all with other people's money."
Parker leaned back in his chair and watched her.
"I'm so ashamed, Holly. I didn't want everyone in Wagtail to know. I just wanted to slink back here and lead a quiet life, raise my children and try to recuperate. If it's any consolation to the people they stole from, I'm broke. Flat out, completely broke. I'm bartering with a French teacher, writing lessons for her kids in exchange for French lessons for mine. I can barely scrabble together enough change for a couple of cans of cat food. If this weren't farmland, we wouldn't have anything to eat. Don't ask me what I'm going to do come winter. I didn't get here soon enough to plant a big garden or put up preserves this year."
I reached for her hand.
"Oh, Clementine, don't worry about food. We'll take care of you."
She grimaced. "We're living in this big, fancy house and still have all the trappings. But between Dad's investments with Ron and the spending habits of his last wife, he's nearly wiped out, too. We own the two most useless properties in all of Wagtail, his ex-wife's empty store and the Wagtail Springs Hotel. There's no money for us to make a go of either one of them, and no one is interested in buying or renting. We're a mess, Holly." Parker made himself useful by pouring tea into mugs and passing them around. I eyed him suspiciously. "If her husband didn't hire you, who are you, and why are you stalking Clementine?"
"Stalking is an awfully strong word for it, don't you think?"
At exactly the same time, Clementine and I said, "No."
"It's common belief that your friend here has some items of great value, namely the frustratingly elusive ghost diamonds worth millions."
I sucked in a deep breath. "We were having tea with the enemy. You're here to steal them?" Clementine leaned forward and waved both hands in the air.
"How many times do I have to tell you that I don't have them?"
"The story goes that Mastermind Ron and his patsy, Clementine's husband, saw the big crash of their pyramid coming and invested in a tidy nest egg that they could sell on the black market if necessary. The ghost diamonds. Except the feds can't find them. All we know is that Clementine's husband was heard to say that he hid them in something Clementine would never give away.
Holly, I swear I don't have them. Didn't know a thing about them, don't know where they are. I even sold my engagement and wedding rings and gave the proceeds to the feds. But horrible people like Parker have been swarming to Wagtail in the belief that the diamonds are here. The other night I found a crazy woman in my closet who demanded I turn them over to her because her boyfriend lost all his money, and he wouldn't marry her if he was poor. Can you imagine? Like I'd hand them over to a lunatic stranger? If I had them, I'd give them to the feds. Then she asked me for my Hermes bag. Can you believe her nerve? I gave it to her and told her the truth. She could have it if it would make her feel better, but my boys stashed their crayons in it and left it in the sun on a hot day. If it weren't damaged, I'd have sold it and turned the cash over to the feds. Parker tilted his head at her.
And her clever husband knew Clementine would also turn over the diamonds. So where did he hide them? As diamonds go, they're huge, but they're still little bitty things that could be stashed anywhere. It's a mystery. Unless, of course, Clemmy knows and isn't saying.
Don't call me Clemmy, she uttered through clenched teeth.
So you're following her around in the hope that she'll, what? Go to a safe deposit box in a bank? Visit the diamonds in a hay bale? There are people who want them.
People? What did that mean? I imagined a lot of people would want them.
Then his meaning dawned on me.
Someone hired you.
You're not here because you lost money. Hey, I'm a private investigator, okay? It's an honorable way to make a living.
Not very good at it, are you?
Muttered Clementine. If I had made the effort, you never would have seen me tailing you. The ones you'd better worry about are the ones you don't see. He faced me. I'm not doing anything wrong.
May I once again point out to you that I saved Clemmy today?
If you'll pardon my saying so, you ought to be treating me like a hero right now.
Frightening Clementine and her children and disrupting their lives is wrong.
By the way, here's your gun, Clementine. I handed it to her. Parker leaned over for a better look.
A toy?
He frowned at Clementine. You cannot tell me your father doesn't have guns. I know he's a hunter. Why aren't you carrying a real gun for protection?
The corners of Clementine's mouth twitched. We sold them to pay for his trip to the dog show.
I sucked in a deep breath and stared at Clementine. No wonder dark bags hung under her eyes. I doubted that she was getting much sleep between watching out for intruders, protecting her children and horses, and worrying about money.
If you sent the horses away, why are you out in the barn all the time?
She whispered.
I'm afraid my stupid husband hid the diamonds here somewhere. He knows the one thing Dad and I would never sell is this land. If I could just find them and turn them over to the feds, all this terror would end. People like Parker would go away.
She released a huge sigh.
I'm beginning to think it was a huge lie perpetrated by the person who really has the diamonds. That would be the worst thing for me.
The ghost diamonds have been missing for decades. There isn't a reason in the world to think that Ron and my husband bought them.
They could remain lost, and my life would be a never-ending misery because people would think that I have them.
Clementine opened the clip, holding her hair back in an untidy mess. Masses of straight blonde hair spilled over her shoulders. She would be a natural to play Becca Wraith.
Of course. Clementine wouldn't even need a wig. She was clipping her hair back haphazardly when I asked casually, "Have you been staying at the Wagtail Springs Hotel, Clementine?"
As soon as the words slipped out, I wondered if I should have asked her privately instead of in front of Parker. She blinked at me.
How do you know that?
Parker frowned. When did you do that? I played coy. I hear there have been quite a few sightings of Becca Wraith there lately. I saw her myself. Clementine licked her lips. I went there a couple of times, like the night I found the woman in my closet, after the bonfire. I thought the hotel might be safer. Out here, no one would hear our screams.
Parker slumped in his chair and chuckled. I can't believe it. Clementine is nothing if not a creature of habit. Every day at 5 in the afternoon, she locks up tight. I never dreamed she might be slipping out after dark.
Because monsters like you are lurking outside. I have to lock my doors behind me when I step outside for anything. Otherwise people walk in and snoop around.
They were getting off the subject. So after the woman broke in, she didn't so much break in as walk in unnoticed. I guess she wandered through the house. It was a pretty big place.
You threw her out and went to the hotel?
Right. Why are you questioning me? There's nothing wrong or illegal about it. My dad owns the Wagtail Springs Hotel.
I had to tread carefully. I'm not suggesting you did anything wrong. You were there the night Mallory was murdered.
Murdered? Doc told me her death was an accident, said Clementine.
I'm not so sure about that. You were so close. Didn't you see anything? Did you hear anyone scream or argue outside?
Murder? Are you sure?
Clementine pressed her hand against her forehead.
I thought she was drunk and fell into the water. Ollie, she's the woman I found in my closet.
I sat back in my chair, stunned. The one who said her boyfriend lost all his money? She must have meant Mark.
That's the one. I'm just horrified that someone killed her.
Clementine's chest heaved with each breath. She coiled her fingers into fists.
I couldn't sleep, of course. Most of the night I paced, you know, worried about money and Parker and people breaking into the house because I wasn't there. It was really pretty quiet that night. I don't recall a scream. Maybe a few boisterous voices when the bars closed, but nothing worrisome.
She held up a finger.
I do remember seeing someone run by. I thought he might be looking for a dog or something.
Would you recognize him?
She held her palms up.
It was dark. He was nothing but a shadow. Could have been a woman, for that matter. The only thing I remember was a distinctive gait. It was awkward. Maybe an old person or someone who wasn't used to running. Like his feet or legs hurt.
That didn't sound like anyone I could think of. You need to tell Dave when he gets here. The diamonds put a whole new slant on Mallory's death. What if another diamond hunter had killed her? I turned to Parker. What about you, Mr. Nosy Pants? Where were you that night?
I grabbed a bite at the barbecue place and then I went back to the inn.
He studied his hands for a moment.
If you must know, I took a long hot bath.
I couldn't help but grin at the thought of Macho Parker indulging in a bath. With bubbles, I hope.
Hey, I've been standing around in the cold watching Clemmy. A guy's allowed to warm up, you know. My room has one of those old-fashioned clawfoot soaking tubs.
Stop calling me Clemmy.
Unless I was mistaken, Parker seemed to have formed a fondness for Clementine. What if he was lying? Or worse, what if he killed Mallory so he wouldn't have competition in the search for the missing ghost diamonds? I must have looked at him funny because he asked,
What? May I remind you that I saved Clemmy? What would have happened if I hadn't been here, huh?
His eyes narrowed.
What I don't understand is why that guy wanted to kill Clementine. If she's gone, no one will find the ghost diamonds.
28. Did he say anything to you? Asked Parker.
Clementine winced and gently massaged her throat, but shook her head.
Not a word.
Did you get a good look at him?
There wasn't much to see, said Parker. A guy in black wearing a beagle mask.
Clementine gasped. A beagle? Are you serious? That changes everything.
You mean because your dad breeds beagles? I asked.
Too odd to be a coincidence, isn't it?
Clementine's brow furrowed. Trixie barked, and a moment later when someone knocked on the door, we all jumped. It's Dave, Clementine, he called from outside. I rose to open the door. Dave entered, clearly surprised to see Parker. I want you to come stay at the inn, Clementine, I said. There's safety in numbers.
I can't. They'll ransack the house. It's all we have left.
I'm not leaving. Dave sat down at the table. Suppose you tell me what happened. I had other ideas. Now that Dave was with Clementine and Parker, she'd be okay. I hoped so anyway. I said goodbye, called Trixie, and hurried back to the inn. I hadn't had a moment to open a bank account, but I had a nice little wad of cash stashed in my quarters. I retrieved it as fast as I could. With any luck, Mr. Huckle would still be at the inn. Trixie on my heels, I ran down the stairs and into the dining area. Mr. Huckle was just getting ready to leave. I asked him to wait a moment and dodged into the inn kitchen. Any leftovers today? I asked. The cook pointed at a stack of containers. I was about to put them in the fridge. Thank you. I could barely carry them. Nevertheless, I stopped by the pantry where we kept a stash of cat and dog foods on hand for people who preferred to feed their babies what they were used to eating. I nabbed a few cans of food I had seen Clementine buying for her cats and staggered out to Mr. Huckle. Would you please take these to Clementine? I helped him carry them to his golf cart, and then I dug in my pocket and handed him the wad of cash. Stop by the store to pick up whatever Clementine needs. She won't take this if she knows it's from me, so tell her that her dad sent money or something. Mr. Huckle planted a kiss on my cheek. You're just like your grandmother. Bless you both. I dashed back to the inn and asked Oma and Zelda. Anyone know where Holmes might be? He said he would be helping Rose. Oma grinned so wide that I had to add, It's nothing romantic, okay? Ach, too bad. I think he is with Rose on the front porch. Tonight is trick-or-treating night for canines, felines, and children in Wagtail. Does Trixie want to go with Ginger Snap? Trixie's ears perked up at the sound of her name. Zelda laughed. Trixie would love to go. She says she'll do anything for treats. Yeah, like we didn't already know that. I barged out to the porch where Holmes was helping Rose organize for the trick-or-treating event. Placing a gentle hand on Holmes's arm, I spoke softly so other people wouldn't hear and be alarmed. Someone attacked Clementine in her barn. She's afraid to leave the house and refuses to come to the inn.